Welcome.
Thank you.
Shannon, it's a pleasure to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here in Cannes.
Thank you. We are at the Film Festival.
We are.
We are at the Carlton Hotel, which is the most emblematic place.
It is. A very storied location for our film, yes.
That means that's a special meaning to you, actually, the Carlton Hotel.
It does, yes. I've been doing some location scouting while I've been here.
Okay. How about you tell us what brings you to Cannes this year?
Well, what brings me to Cannes, we're here kind of making the first little ripples of information about a film that I've been trying to make for a very long time about the Bentley boys. Wonderful. And those of you who are familiar with their story might know that a very pivotal moment took place here in this hotel where the man who was the chairman of Bentley Motors at the time, he staged what's become known as legend, but was in fact a publicity stunt, where he decided to race his 6-liter Bentley up the coast against the Blue Train to draw attention to the Bentley brand when sales had stagnated after the Great Depression. But it made a very big splash in that day, as he had hoped it would, and has become legend. And that's one of the reasons we're here. We're taking a look at the exterior of the hotel, which looks exactly the same as it did in 1930 when he staged that stunt. I don't know that we'll be able to shoot inside, but we're gonna bring a crew down here and have the Bentley under the famous portico.
So we're right at the heart of history here.
Right at the heart of history here, yes. So of the film industry this week, anyway.
Best of both worlds.
Yes.
So the movie will be about the Bentley boys, not only this Blue Train story that made Bentley famous.
Yes, exactly. It's a very small part. Yes, and in fact, a very special Bentley girl, Dorothy Padgett, mm-hmm. who she provided some financing for somewhat controversial technology when Tim Birkin, who was, in my opinion, the most charismatic of the Bentley boys, insisted on attaching what was known as sort of a hand grenade to the front of a beautifully engineered Bentley in 1929 to make it go faster because he believed the Germans were coming. History has borne out that he was right, but at the time he decided the only way to stop them was to build blower Bentleys.
Uh-huh.
So he went looking for financing, and it wasn't a very popular idea. Bentleys were winning all of the world's biggest races in those days, so why mess with a good thing? But he was one of those people in our midst who are sort of too much for others and very charismatic, and they're always pushing us out of our comfort zone and pushing us to embrace change. And he said, we're going to build this technology, and convinced Dorothy Padgett, who was the wealthiest heiress in the UK at the time, was also a lesbian who gambled, smoked, drank, shot, and rode horses.
Everything we liked.
Everything she liked, but nothing that her family liked.
Okay.
So she too was a bit of a misfit. And these two teamed up and built these blower Bentleys. And without that technology, I believe Bentley would not have beaten the Germans in the 1930 Grand Prix.
That's right, Mercedes and Caracciola.
Yes.
Yeah, the 7-liter at the time.
Exactly, yes. There's some controversy over this, but for our purposes, it is a dramatic coming together of both Bentley's efforts and of Tim Birkin and Dorothy Padgett's efforts. They teamed up, and as most people who know the Bentley story know, Tim Birkin went gung-ho after Caracciola for the first several laps of the race and forced the Germans to overuse their supercharger. And in the end, the car fell out of the race and the Bentley boys cruised effortlessly to their fourth Le Mans victory. And within a matter of weeks, the team was sort of splintering and the company was on its way to being sold to Rolls-Royce. So it was a moment that was slipping away.
Yeah, but that was in the wake of the crisis
in
1929 that reached Europe a good year later.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically the movie is to cover the span of the 10 first years of Bentley Motors, pretty much.
We pick it up when they're sort of at the height of their prowess.
Okay.
They've won Le Mans twice in a row, three times total. And Babe Barnato wants his hat trick. He wants to win a third time. And then he sort of is starting to see this motor company that he bought is a bit more trouble than he intended, and he doesn't like to lose money, and so he's quietly pursuing selling the brand. But they were at the height. And then, of course, we know the Wall Street crash was tough on the world, so their fortunes were starting to decline. It's very much a resonant story as we, in our own time, as we examine the shifting geopolitical power dynamics. You know, it's a bit of a metaphor. Uncertain technology, who's going to control that industry in the future? The greatest nations of the world duking it out on the racetracks of Europe in the infancy of motor racing. It's all very exciting, but it should feel quite familiar to where we are now. And what I love about it is that for the first time, there's been about a decade of studio racing movies, and none of them has had a consequential female character.
Uh-huh.
And they've all made over $100 million in the box office without bothering to pay attention to half the global audience. So we're going to change that.
So we're talking about Bentley Boys, but it's about ladies.
Yes.
With Dorothy Padgett, exactly, and maybe a few other characters.
She was the first woman to own a racing team, and as few people know, there were more women in motor racing then than there are now. It was very exciting. I mean, the year that the ultimate race in the story, 1930 Le Mans, had two women from France racing for the first time, two lady racers.
Great. I mean, the roaring 20s, roaring cars,
yes,
champagne.
Yes.
I mean, we can already feel the vibes.
Well, it's all very exciting. I think the reason it's inspiring is because you come away from the film sort of looking, which person am I in this dynamic? Am I the one who is inspired by the changemaker, or am I the changemaker? And then in your own life, you're sort of looking for ways that you can be more alive and live every moment to the fullest. So it's a bit of a cautionary tale, but quite inspiring and thrilling, in a world no one's ever seen on the big screen before.
Well, basically, I remember there was a book basically based on the story of the Bentley. It was pretty much only one, which was...
The Bentley Era, is that the one you mean?
Yeah, like Full Throttle.
Yes, Tim Burton's autobiography.
Right.
Yes, it's not for everyone.
But it's been a book that every little kid in England has been reading for a few generations
for a few
now.
Generations,
very inspiring.
Though, yes. I've read it 9 times, so I can quote from it verbatim if you
so
need
you
me
probably
to.
Picked on the book.
Yes.
For
well,
the movie
no.
A bit.
If you look carefully, I mean, he's a very sort of refined, aristocratic British, you know, upper class man, and an ex World War I fighter pilot, and he sort of doesn't say very much about himself. But if you look very carefully, he reveals that he was actually quite a fragile soul, mm-hmm, and the only thing he was good at, and he was very good at it, was motor racing, and this was not convenient for anyone who loved him.
Yeah.
They needed him to be other things, a dutiful son, a dutiful husband, a dutiful father, a better friend, be more responsible about his finances, and he couldn't do any of those things. And he had a terrible stammer, but when he got behind the wheel of a racing car, it all fell away, as he said, like a cloak off my shoulders. I feel at home, mm-hmm, as happy as a king. And I think everybody out there can relate to having something in their life, or wishing they did, that made them feel that way.
I have a feeling we can talk about that movie in
for hours and hours.
Do you have, by any chance, any idea of some of the actors you're going to hire for this?
Do.
Or maybe that's a secret.
I can't say who they are yet.
Okay.
They are both rising stars who you've seen their movies, and you've seen her parents' movies. And you're going to be seeing a lot more of both of them over the next year.
Exciting.
Yes, it is.
And you know how at Radio du Cinéma we're very excited about soundtracks.
Yes. We are going to have a gorgeous score for this film. It's been one of my daydreams to be... It might be the London Symphony Orchestra, but the day that we're sitting in the recording booth watching the finished film screening, and we're looking out at an orchestra recording the score live, it's going to be one of my favorite moments.
Look, thank you so much. It seems like it's very exciting because we're at the very beginning of, basically, you pull the plug in right now. How long is it supposed to take to make a movie like this?
Well, we're planning to shoot this summer if we can stay on schedule and line up all of the cars and the actors' schedules and all of the dynamics. We'd like to shoot this summer in late August, and we shoot for about somewhere between 9 and 10 weeks, and then we take a breath. And we're in post-production, and hopefully you might be seeing the film premiering in the festival circuit about this time next year.
Oh,
yeah,
that's quick.
If we stay on schedule, but...
I was thinking more like 2 years or something.
No, we hope next year. It's a bit like herding cats. Some of the actors that we plan to cast around our leads, they're very, very well known. And it's coordinating all of their schedules to see if we can have it line up with the shooting window that we need this summer. So if we can do that, hopefully you'll see it next year.
Wonderful. Well, I hope we can follow up every so often and see the progress in the movie, because that sounds like a very exciting product.
It
well,
is.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.